Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. I'm very excited. My guest today, he is one of those people that he looks at the big picture and he cuts through the BS and he tells it like it is. And we need that right now more than ever. I'm very excited to welcome back Joaquin Flores. Thank you for joining me, sir.
Thanks for having me on, Mel.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I've been wanting to get you on for a long time. I sneak on to your new resistance channel once in a while to kind of see what's really going on, because you got a great background. Just for my audience that doesn't know you yet or might not have seen our first show, if you could tell real quick a little bit about your background, so, and then we'll get into it.
Sure. I'm a geopolitical analyst. I look at issues relating to color revolutions, insurgency, instability. That involves, of course, messaging, public relations, propaganda, that sort of thing. Also, strategic forecasting and geopolitics. You know, we look at what's happening around the world and the relationship between countries, what that says about the political economy, what it says about the future, what it says about instability, war, right? So my background, I came, you know, out of Los Angeles. Folks may know, follow my work. I was involved with the left pretty heavily. I was a Democrat, SEIU fundraised for Obama, and I've come full circle, right? So as they say, I'm back in form. I can see now that, you know, the ideals that I grew up with were the right ones, that the country that we have is the only one that we have. It's a tough world. It's a mean world out there. And I think a lot of people take for granted the sort of things that we have and had in our country. We still have. We have to hold on to. We have to strengthen those institutions. But yeah, it's a lot of work. But I'm thrilled to be with you today.
Well, thank you. And you have a very distinct point of view because of what you're saying, and also being an analyst of the world. First and foremost, I wanted to ask you. You had some comments about the Zelensky meeting in. At Congress, and I wanted your take on that, because the American people are being deceived, as you know, on a grand scale, and the rest of the world and a lot of places where you interact and are somebody who shares information are not looking at it that way. If you could tell a little bit about the difference between what the American people are hearing and what the rest of the world is seeing, I'd really appreciate that.
Yeah, we are living in two alternate realities, because on the one hand, we're being, you know, sort of spoon-fed a narrative, but we still have access to the internet. It almost raises questions as to the origins or the purposes of the internet altogether, right? And what has happened is that there's two visions. And in the United States, you have really a whole vision involving that Ukraine is this country that we've had this long-term alliance with, that we've always been, you know, connected to. And they just kind of rolled this out like, oh, weren't you paying attention? Like, you know, Ukraine is a longtime ally of the United States. No, no, guys, this is a new thing. And it's a very dangerous thing, because it's a dangerous sort of neck of the woods when you have a conflict like this. Our strategic interest is very much at odds and what the rest of the world sees, with the interests of a few oligarchical families in the U.S. connected to the Senate, now in the White House, ostensibly, in the form of Joe Biden. And this is a very big problem, because people have been exposed to the Burisma scandal. They've been exposed to the ongoing corruption. They kind of know what happened, and yet kind of fades into the back of the memory into these 3, 4, 5, 6 month cycles. And then we kind of forget what's happening in the world. You know, why are they pushing this stuff? Who are the senators involved? Who in the executive branch is involved right now in Ukraine? Why are they pushing that agenda? Where is that money going? Is it all these weapons? People have raised issues about being a laundering scheme. So when Zelensky spoke to the Congress, keep in mind that a large handful of congressmen didn't show up. They weren't as disrespectful to walk out, but they didn't show up. And that was very important, because it showed that this is a political issue. It was like 100% of Democrats were there, to put it that way. Right. So that says a very strong message that this is not a bipartisan issue. This is not an issue that Americans are convinced is an issue of national security.
Right.
And I think that's really the sort of the bottom line in terms of the use of our resources.
Yeah, I mean, it's very scary. I don't think we have the kind of money that they have in this $1.7 trillion bill. And B, there's a lot of stuff stuck in there and very little for America. I mean, certainly nothing about our own security or what's happening here in our inner cities, what's happening at our border. I mean, it's like this entire bill was kind of the oligarchy uniparty saying, you know what, American people, you're not our, we don't care about you anymore. You're not our problem. And this seems to be like a mass scale thing. I don't think it's, first of all, I don't believe there's right or left, Republican or Democrat anymore. There's a uniparty. They're not working for we the people. But we the people seem to be waking up to a certain extent, but not really as much as I think the rest of the world is. And I'm seeing a lot of people sitting on the sidelines at a time when I don't think we can afford to do that.
A lot of people, a lot of the world is still kind of stuck in this left and right. They're kind of looking at things from the lens of they're confused. You know, they were used to the situation maybe 10, 20, 30 years ago when Democrats would openly lie to the public and say, we're against war. Now they're being honest and saying, you know, we're openly for war, which is kind of a relief. We know who not to vote for, except our votes have to count, of course. But, you know, if you look at what in the rest of the world, they're still kind of catching up. One of the big things that happened in the UK that I noted during the initial lockdown, this was during when Boris Johnson was still the prime minister, the beginning of the pandemic at that time. And what happened is that people that you would have thought looked like the left, like mobilized on in Trafalgar Square and different parts in different centers of London, you would have thought it was a kind of a left wing thing because of the urban dimension of it, the mass dimension of it, the energy of it. You heard like hip hop through loudspeakers. And when you actually saw what was going on, this was people that were connected to any anti-lockdown stuff, people on the right, people, you know, independent, people never been politicized before for the first time coming out. And we saw, and there were different groups, you know, they have different names, stand-up ex, they, you know, they all called something, right? But the point being that is that, you know, to a sociologist or a historian of social movements would say, this looks like a left-wing mobilization. It doesn't look like your traditional, you know, conservative mobilization. The conservatives don't really mobilize. And so to see it like this was a paradigm shift. And this is happening in the US. One thing that's different, however, is that in the UK, they never had a figure like Trump. So even though they've gotten past the left and right stuff, they don't know how to deal with someone who looks like he was part of the oligarchy, someone who looks like he comes from the same kind of problem groups of people that we're used to dealing with, seem to be at odds with a lot of that whole agenda, seem to be at odds with sort of this globalist push towards upward redistribution of wealth and power. So I think that's been kind of a curveball for a lot of people and kind of don't really understand, you know, what happened in the US, where for generations, money bought politics for so long that really the only way that something like that could happen would be, for example, through a vehicle like that, right? So that, you know, but besides, it's a very good question, very good point that you raised, Mel. Very good.
Yeah. You know, I mean, the crazy part here, and I think you have some insight into this, is that I believe that America is still in some kind of color revolution. And now with the Twitter files and other things coming out, I think last time you were here, we talked about the National Endowment for Democracy and what they've done all over the world. It appears that it's happening within. And then with the Twitter files, we're getting confirmation that the Pentagon, the Department of Justice, the DHS, FBI, CIA, we're all very involved in manipulating the people, propaganda, all of that through the internet. What is the implications for that? Because at this point, it appears as Americans, you and I are both looking at this thinking, well, whose side are they on? They're not on our side. Who are they working for?
These things are very divisive, and they cause an injury to people's, to Americans' faith in our institutions. Our institutions are governmental. They're social. They're broader than just, you know, what Department of Motor Vehicles, right? Institutions are academia. Institutions are medical. Institutions are things like this that regulate, that deal with our daily lives. The church is an institution, for example. So many institutions, and when you have these sort of organized pushes like we saw from Bill Gates, from Anthony Fauci surrounding you know, this last chapter that we're getting through, you could see then that they had politicized things, and that Twitter and that Jack Dorsey, who is still yet to be held accountable for all everything that we're seeing from Twitter files so far, is a step in the right direction. I'm optimistic about it. We need to have a more clear conversation. As you mentioned, we are still in the throes of instability. It has been characterized by numerous experts as a color revolution, which does have a template. It you know, what has happened in the U.S. ticks, you know, 15 out of 20 of those boxes. If it's, you know, if it walks like a duck, right? So I think that where this has to go is, number one, truth and reconciliation. We can't be mimicking the crazy blue-haired Twitteristas from the past that were doxing people, that were going after people. We cannot punch down. We have to punch up, right? We need to call for clarity in our institutions. What about how Jack Dorsey effectively worked as a minister of information for the BLM Antifa terrorist organization,
right?
Because he was basically naming who the leadership are, because if someone said, I'm the leader of BLM, then you can suspend your Twitter account for lying. So effectively, you know, who the world thinks are the leaders of BLM was handpicked by Jack Dorsey and whoever is behind him, right? And yet, while they were acting as an editor, they were pretending to be a magazine rack, right? While acting as a magazine, definitely saying, do not vote this way. You must vote that way. And you had people in the streets making terrorist threats that were 97%, you know, nonviolent, of course. But nevertheless, within that margin of error, billions of dollars of property and lives were lost. More importantly, you know, things can always be built back, but you can never get people's lives lost. There were murders. People recall this was one of the hottest summers we ever had.
Right.
We need truth and reconciliation, Mel. This chapter, this is not over. You know, Kyle's case went well. That was great. But that's not everyone else. OK, who is responsible for creating that environment? Right. In other words, the people who have turned their attention the wrong way need to be looking at what Jack Dorsey has done. I'm glad he's out. But this is just the beginning. Truth and reconciliation.
I mean, I think that we're going to see this unravel through, and there's a lot of NGOs involved here too. We find the Aspen Institute was also helping Twitter decide who was right and wrong. Southern Poverty Law Center, also Atlanta Council at Facebook, you know, Google, we haven't even started to unpack, and you know, it's going to be the worst of them all because people were out there that worked at Google, Zach Voorhees and Epstein, coming out saying like they are manipulating everything. But it does appear a little bit that the tech companies are being put in check. I don't know if it's financially, at least it looks like they're losing their cachet, their power of some sort, or maybe it's a temporary thing. A lot of different thoughts about Elon Musk and his participation and his part here. You know, half the people think he's like this free speech hero. Another half of the people think he's an opportunist, and on both sides, people are just happy for what he's doing. But your thoughts on Elon Musk himself?
You know what? Maybe I have a funny way of defining words, but I just say that everyone operating at that level is an opportunist of some kind. That doesn't mean that they can't be made use of for us. It doesn't mean that they can't be pushed in this direction or that. So you send signals, you know, we want more of this, you know, right. And that's the kind of thing that he's going to boost, amplify, and things like that. So is he doing it for his own interests? Well, yeah, I mean, I wasn't born yesterday. So I just take that's just something that is part of the equation. You're walking into it, right? So the only real question for me is sort of like, you know, are commitments he has with other, you know, actors going to prevent him from doing the things that he wants to do or the things, right? And from the perspective of democratic institutions, we have to be careful of this shift away from elections, election integrity, over to, you know, polls on Twitter. Like the last I checked, we still need to focus on the, you know, the legal constitutional stuff. It's great to, you know, popularity contests are wonderful and everything, but they don't elect our leaders. They don't, right? They don't pass laws. So
yeah, and everyone and everyone's not on Twitter. I keep explaining to people, as much as you think Twitter is like the town square, it's only the town square to the people on Twitter. There are millions and millions of people that do not participate in that and have a say as well. And bringing up the elections, I'm not surprised, but I am upset what happened in Arizona, Carrie Lake's case was pretty good and pretty telling, and I thought really important for the nation. But yet again, we have a judge throw out another election case. I'm of the firm belief that unless we fix the elections, our country will continue to go in the wrong direction, certainly in terms of trust and all of that. But it doesn't appear that there are any, people that can actually make a difference doing anything to clean up the elections, get rid of the machines. But on the other side, now they feel empowered. And I read a New York Times article yesterday. Unfortunately, I sometimes have to do that, as you do. And I read it, and it basically said they're going to go basically HR1 on steroids. They're going to be, registering kids when they're young for when they turn 18. They're going to be reinstilling felons voting. They're going to be everyone that they're going to have automatic registration for legals and illegals for voting, and basically continue down this path of mail-in ballots and all of that. I mean, where does this end? How can this continue on?
We saw it all in the film Gangs in New York, when you saw riding on Ellis Island, and they were being, hey, you have to join this party or you don't become an American citizen. Right. Oh, really? Okay. You're right. And that's what's happening now. But there needs to be a broader conversation, because the things that the Democrat Party got away with in the last election was under the rubric of election reform, in fact. So people don't know that a lot of the things, and they were the ones had been testifying in different committees on the record on C-SPAN saying electronic voting is a problem, in fact, right? All the same people who said it was a problem suddenly said it's a conspiracy theory when it involved the 45th president. It's a very strange thing what happened, very strange thing. But the essence of what was behind that are some truths, that because these truths are unacknowledged, it becomes politicized and the Democrats weaponize them. For example, there are places in the deep South that it is more difficult to register to vote if you're Black. It's just a fact. If we made it easier to vote for people in the deep South who are Black, then that would be one thing that Stacey Abrams couldn't say. Number one. Number two, you see, it would lend faith to this idea that, we live in a democracy and people have choices. And it's ridiculous to think that a whole segment, about 12-13% of our population, has been forced to vote one way or, face social stigma, be told that they're not really a true member of that community. I mean, these are awful and racist things to say and to do, and to basically ghettoize a community or communities, or to create an apartheid political system where they have to stay on this reservation or they have to stay on that plantation is totally unacceptable. And if Democrats want to represent African Americans well, then there needs to be competition. There needs to be people need choice. There needs to be a legitimate winning candidate from other parties that can say, these are other ideas or these are other projects that we can manage and win. So this is what's happening, is that we have to get behind this and say, yeah, voter registration drives, because we know that African-American voters, that anyone intersects, is going to be open to a conversation and can talk about whatever their needs are, and they can vote any number of ways. That has been a big crisis, Democrat Party. We saw Joe Biden get on TV and say the thing out loud he's not supposed to say, which is that there's no such thing as a single Latino voter, because you have Mexicans on the West Coast, you have Cubans in Florida. They're very different voting blocks, they say. And then you have Black people that are supposedly all the same.
Right.
Again, it's racist stuff coming out of people who, no doubt you're not surprised, come out of the same institutions that have been promoting this sort of this apartheid system of politics. So, in terms of building up our sense of faith in institutions, there needs to be some substance behind that faith. Elections count. Every vote counts. Every ballot counts. You see what I'm saying? These are things that have fallen out of the conversation. And we need to check our own kind of inherent assumptions. Like, why would we think that a voter registration drive targeting Black people would inherently make them more Democrats? Unless, you see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. I've thought that many times myself. Like, why would this be? And it's because of that. But I know you've been in California. I'm in New York. I'm telling you that they went in New York to the NYCHA housing and went through a lot of the welfare programs and all of that. And it was a barrage for 2 years. Basically, if you were getting any kind of services from New York City, you were also being told constantly that it was the Democrats that were helping you. They totally violated all those like separation of what's supposed to happen. And when you look at the NYCHA housing in New York City, it almost voted a completely Democrat. And I'm telling you, the amount of people that they say voted in that housing and those housing projects don't vote, a lot of them. So wherever we are, there's something coming. Like you worked with the unions and everything. There's something coming from the very top. This is also in the unions, the same voting stuff where these overlords are making them do that. What do we do about that? Because that, I think that was a real problem, especially here in New York.
Yeah, see, the thing is that Democrats, there's a lot more registered Democrats typically than Republicans, but Democrats don't really get out the vote unless people remind them, by the way, today's an election day. Oh, okay. Right. So what happened? Yeah, it's very funny, but I mean, it's a little sad. But the thing is that these are people who vote en masse that are members of organizations simply by way of their lot in life. So, and they can be fine organization, it could be American Association, retired people, whatever. There's right. many different, but they send out mailers, right? And so besides this, besides the ones that you would know, there's a lot of NGOs that were getting finance, and they privately is the way, it's the legal way in the US. Many people, by the way, say, you know, the United States doesn't have a lot of corruption. Well, that's because the things in other countries that are, you know, illegal are legal in the United States. We call it lobbying. Others would call it bribery. Right. So, you know, keep that in mind that you have this NGO sphere that's openly operating, openly. They can send things. You can, in political speech, okay, as long as you're not part of the candidate, you can openly lie. You can openly do all these crazy things in these mailers. There were despicable tactics that were happening about misinforming people when election day was, sending out flyers to say, you know, if your name is from, you know, K through Z or whatever, you vote on the following day. I mean, there's just, so these things are adding up, Mel. And if you know, there's an agenda that's saying that the political and cultural climate in the United States has to be X, Y, and Z by such and such date. Right. And it doesn't matter how people vote. And if they vote the other way, then we're just going to like change that outcome. And then we're going to accuse people, you know, of who are pointing out these assaults on our institutions. The people who point that out, then we do this gaslighting, abusive, authoritarian thing by targeting them, saying, oh, look, they're undermining our institutions. You know, this is like, in abusive families, like the kid who points out that uncle's doing the bad stuff when the door's closed, that kid's not the bad guy. Okay. Right. The uncle's the bad guy. But in abusive families and broken, you know, in the cycles of violence and abuse, a lot of the family members will turn against the little kid, like, shh, you know, that's not right. Don't accuse uncle of that. That's what's happening in our system. Period.
So true. And it's so crazy because, you know, you bring up the NGOs. I talk a lot about 501c3s are one thing, and it's a total racket. A lot of churches and a lot of places that get 501c3 benefits of not paying taxes then do the dirty work of the government to keep those tax breaks, which is insane and very sad. But even worse, 501c4s don't have to tell you where their money is coming from. And I've been looking at the think tanks and all of that. A lot of it's very opaque. It could be the CCP, it could be Qatar, it could be wherever, and you're not going to know. And that's the thing that I've been looking at a lot is the money. And when you look at the money, which you did for a long time, you realize that there is an oligarchy here. And if you trace down, go to Influence Watch or Open Books or any of them, and you really trace down, like, who are these NGOs? Who's at the top of these NGOs? You're going to find the 10 billionaires, basically, that run all of them. I mean, at the end of the day, they're giving the most money. You got, you know, Arabella, Open Society, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Ford Foundation, Carnegie. And it's like, how can this small group of oligarchs basically be running America? And the American people have no idea that all of these NGOs, all of these groups, the ones I talked about before, Southern Poverty Law Center, Human Rights Campaign, ACLU, are all funded by a handful of billionaires.
You know what? It's the same thing that happens in everyone's life. You know, when you're changing jobs and you got to make sure you have enough in the bank. And then you'd be like, you know what? I probably have a few rotating subscriptions, whether it's Netflix, whatever it is, right. I should just cancel. Okay. So for about 40 years, we went on autopilot because for people who know how to work and don't make personal decision problems in life, life could be pretty good in the United States. Yeah. There are probably bigger social safety nets in other countries, true, but there's a trade-off in there, right? So it's afforded a lot of upward mobility for people and a lot of freedom from government and a lot of freedom to enjoy life, build projects you believe in. So while we were doing that, we didn't pay attention to, you know, 1% of something going this way and 2% of something going that way. Now we're like, oh, wait a minute, you know, dreams are over, guys. Okay, what we have to make sure that our kids can live half as well as we have been living. And that means canceling some subscriptions. And one of those subscriptions that we have to cancel is this alphabet soup of NGOs. You right. see, and when you look at what they've been doing, they've been shaping our culture. They've been basically setting up at the highest level of academia, these chairs. So, you know, the scholars, like you have the Rhodes Scholar, et cetera. So you have, but there's more and more and more. And every, you know, every family that puts in $100 million into a very big institution can have a chair established in their name. But then the research funnel and then these grants are all connected to the same agendas that these same families are investing over and over. So they have a totally different vision. You might call it like a breakaway civilization. They have a totally different vision about what society should look like in 10 years or 50 years. And it involves basically telling you much more what you can do in your daily life than you experience right now. And that's sort of the long and short of it, is much less decision and power in your life if they get their way.
Right. And you, for a long time ago, about a year ago, I read an article that you put out about the Great Reset, about all of this. And I think that still enough American people are not awake to the fact that there is, it's not a conspiracy theory, that there is a globalist group. You brought up Rhodes Scholars. It kind of goes back to them, but also the Rockefellers and a lot of, and the Crown. And there's a lot of planning from this very high up elitist class. And they're not hiding it. It is out there. They have announced their UN, our common agenda. They're announcing a new World Health Organization treaty, which is much more encompassing. And even if you go to any of these websites, World Economic Forum, you go to Global Governance, they have a whole plan for the global governance. They have a whole plan for a global ID. We're now hearing about the central bank digital currency. And yet so many people are still eating this idea that, no, that's a conspiracy theory, even though you can go to all of their individual websites. And unfortunately, a lot of stuff on the O'Biden White House website. And the words are exactly the same. And it's all about a global top-down governance.
Copy paste. Yeah, it's a copy paste agenda. That's like all Operation Lockstep
right.
type stuff, right? Yeah. It was like when you saw everything go, when they announced kind of overnight Build Back Better and everyone had it. Like, remember, it was weird, like to see yes. all these unrelated governments where like Canada had built, like, what is this? Did they like yeah. have a conference call? Right? How did they? So it's like Build Back Better. Actually, Build Back Better, Stronger Together, and Si Se Puede, Yes We Can, were all tested through SEIU. They were long time strategic messaging things that we used in the field to organize, you know, people into labor unions, right? Which ostensibly is not a bad thing. What ends up happening is it becomes a racket for Democrats to go into a cycle of having guaranteed revenues to finance their campaign, to have foot soldiers that will do the door knocking, right? Then when they don't deliver on whatever people wanted, like for right or wrong, it's like what people are voting for, okay? They don't deliver on it. Right. They do some other, and it's not what you want either. Okay. It's not like, oh, they were responsible. No, like they do some other totally crazy, unrelated, corrupt thing, call it like it sounds like to them, and then say, well, it's not exactly what we asked for, but we'll keep pushing next year, try again, blah, blah, blah. It's right. like Lucy with the football, right? So we got, you know, I really feel that, you know, just personally, right? Aside from the analysis, where we at right now, like people usually think that the situation is worse because they're looking at the problems and they're not taking a proper account of all their assets and what they actually have. A lot of the things with the Great Reset didn't land the way that they should have if you, you know, look at their agenda, which they published in that blue book, COVID-19, The Great Reset, it was called this. Yeah. So there's also a white book called The Fourth Industrial Revolution, written also by the same people. Right. And this is Klaus Schwab, of course, and it's like published out of, and Terry Mueller, and it's published out of the World Economic Forum's like publishing house or whatever.
Right.
And you can like buy it. And there's actually free PDF on like floating around, and everyone can read it, and they should.
Right.
The reason is because if you were thinking that there's no one in any institution that cares at all or is looking out for the future, you'd be wrong. If you actually looked at what happened in the United States, not a lot of, like, it could have been much worse. Like, there were things that happened that were pretty good, and they're hard to explain to people who don't understand what happened, you know, but it could have been much worse. And when you read the blue book, you can see that they were planning on having a mass investment into automation based upon a sudden crash in labor supply, which doesn't make sense. Typically, when you have an economic crash, you have labor oversupply. You know, the time that people invest in automation is usually when the economy is strong and wages are even a little inflated, because then it's kind of like with other energy, you start investing in when it starts to look, the other standard is more expensive. So right. When labor is cheap, you don't invest in automation. So it made no sense unless you put in the human equation. If you actually see that the human being is the thing that there's less numbers of, then all of their maths and all of their, you know, forecasts makes sense. Why would you invest in automation? What are we building back better from? Like, what was this big catastrophe? What happened? I didn't see it. You see? But they saw it. I mean, they planned that this was supposed to be like, look, we said it was coming. Here it is.
Right.
You know, if I may, yes, just in the United States alone, people may be aware that for every 1% sustained increase in unemployment, you have 20 to 30,000 incidental, like unrelated, well, related deaths, but incidental, like a person's COBRA insurance expires. They can't afford the premium.
Right.
Their kid dies of asthma, like awful stuff that's preventable, right?
Right.
But this is like the real stuff, or suicides for every 1%. So there's an economic consequence to unemployment, right? Wow, what a surprise. So what happens is when you get up to 20, 30%, like we had for 2 months, or 25% for a month or two when they announced the whole thing, just 2 weeks, guys. And at that point, you could see that over the course of a year, you would have had millions of Americans die from that figure. Okay. So you have like basically 30,000 for every 1%, and you're going from 4%, whatever, to like say 25 or 30%. So that's multiply that out. That's millions of deaths, right, per year.
Right.
That if we had, you know, this kind of harsh lockdown regimen where maybe only the, you know, important most workers were, what were they called? The,
essential.
I deleted the expression from my mind. It's so disgusting.
Right, right.
I saw the pain in your face when you had to remember, you know, that we're all essential.
I just remember them being like, you know, we're shutting down all this stuff, but we're going to, in New York, they shut down everything, but they left open the liquor stores. And I thought, okay, that's essential.
It's essential that I get drunk, let me tell you, you know. So they had like, all systems go, and think about the amount of planning. Think about the discussion. Just imagine, for example, like with intelligence organizations of the countries that had to go along with it. No, Bill Gates is telling us, don't worry. It's actually less deadly than the common cold, and this is more like a readiness drill. Like it's going to be a pandemic, but it's non-lethal. It's going to be blah blah blah. We're just going to see. It's a stress test for society. There's lots of ways that this can get pitched and sound very normal and acceptable to security organizations of sovereign or semi-sovereign states. How do countries go along with it? It's like, this is a stress test. This is a drill. This is are we prepared? The things that we got wrong, we're going to get better next time, whatever, right? So people don't think of it this way. But when you read this blue book and this white book, you're like, this is something else completely. This is not what we experienced. So I'll leave it at that.
No, I agree with that. And, you know, you're pretty good at, I'll tell you, for You can read through propaganda and kind of break it down really well, which is why I suggest everyone follow you, because it, you really do cut through it. But here's where we are now. I believe that the old Aquino mind wars and the manipulation and the behavior modification, you know, I get nervous thinking, where is Cass Sunstein? Because he was the behavior modification guy under Obama, then went to the World Health Organization. People don't know. Now he's back in D.C. His wife is running the payout group called USAID. And I'm looking at this and I'm watching them. I saw Gates just did another contagion exercise or simulation. We got the WHO with is rolling out their like worldwide health pass, you know, treaty that Joe Biden's going to be celebrating upcoming in Davos. And I'm looking at this and I'm thinking they're not done. And people have to really be aware that they're not done and that there is a whole lot of money in that defense authorization bill for behavior control, for encouraging people to get vaccines, for all of this stuff. They're not done. What should people be looking at? Because in my belief, if you know you're being propagandized, it doesn't work. And we really need to put that out on a large scale to people to look for what isn't real before they fall into the same cycle of being traumatized or fear-mongered into following orders that is will destroy. We can't afford to have this happen again.
Right. So you have, on the one hand, they are continuing to say, oh, maybe there's a new strain. They continue to do their drills. They continue to say this. On the other hand, we have this thing called technology. And for much of recent memory, a lot of new technologies at the very minimum are what are sometimes called like dual use, which means that there's a coercive component beyond their use value. So that maybe they have a military value, for example, or whatever. Now, we can't fall into a situation where we become tech phobic. We can't get into a situation where we think that we can like stop the hands of time and, you know, be like Japan and just cut off all the borders and all the ports and everything. What happens is invariably, for right or wrong, and even though those societies might be disgusting to us, other societies are going to become extremely advanced in high tech, and they're going to implement this stuff in a way that makes sense within a security apparatus. We have to figure out, right? How do we use technology like for us? Like, should it be that when you run for office that you agree that the camera is always on you? Like, shouldn't the cameras always be on the people in office or at that level, and the cameras not be on us? You see, so it's sort of like, the problem is not cameras. The problem is like, who are the cameras pointed at? You see? So that's really the issue with technology, is like, who are we using the technology for?
Right.
And, you know, there are technologies that are inherently decentralizing and lead towards greater human freedom. And a lot of the people involved with this Great Reset stuff have jumped on that and kind of sucked up a lot of the attention and energy and buzz language around that. So now we're like afraid of 3D printing, for example, when a lot of the stuff that they rely on to, let's say, implement a globalist system with global supply lines or whatever, relies upon not having 3D printing that works, you see, because if you produce things locally, ergo, you don't need to source them to Timbuktu or Guatemala. Right. Now, so the thing is that a lot of the things that when they're looking at slowing down global trade, this is because obviously this is a good thing from my perspective, because look at where the volume of trade was going. It was actually sucking out of the United States, right? But that doesn't mean that our own oligarchs have some benevolent intention or want all of our collective living conditions to improve. Like, we have to each think individually and then community level collectively, of course. And the kind of legislation that we have to move towards is unlocking things like 3D printing. Like, there's very dangerous legislation coming down the chute, and Democrats keep trying to bring this back over and over. They're trying to say, oh, we want to make sure that 3D printing is available to everyone. But what it actually sets up is a regulatory board that lets them decide who gets licensed to do 3D printing. Why, oh, why would it be, Mel, that the same people that have been failing to get this Great Reset agenda across because of the resistance put up by American people and people around the world, frankly, you know, now they want to you know, keep, like you say, they're keep going with this. But again, the technology doesn't go in their direction. They're talking a big game about 3D printing and all these technical things, but they're actually trying to stall out until they can implement the coercive technologies. Right. So they want to implement things that have no real practical use beyond coercive, that are all just regimentation, control, prediction of your behaviors, et cetera. All that stuff they can say, oh, that's just for marketers to be able to, so you can have like 3D CGI, you know, ads pop up in your field of view while you're driving like Toontown, right? Like Roger Rabbit and stuff, and you're driving and there's like ads specialized, hey, man, right. Buy this now. You know, and it's like, but it's your best friend growing up, and they know that because of the pictures from Facebook. You see,
right,
that's
yeah.
the kind of saying that they want to use that for, which just sounds like psychopath greedy commercialism.
Right.
But in reality, it's actually worse than that. That would be fun almost compared to what they have in mind. So right. It's like, but the thing is that despite that, what they keep promoting this stuff because they're trying to create this default thinking in our mind that that's inevitable. And they're trying to create this kind of assumption among your lay investors as well, that this technology really exists, that it's at this level, that this is where things are going. A lot of the stuff they're talking about, they're decades away from getting even to like prototype. And we can't be afraid of this stuff or let it become the thing that occupies our thoughts and our prayers. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
because that is, they want people to be demoralized
right.
more than anything else. I should right. say, more than anything else with this situation unraveling in the U.S. where we have to restore our institutions.
Right.
They want to kick you when you down. They want you to look at what happened just last November. Like, oh, that just proves there's nothing to live for. And, you know, and they want you to think that. And yeah. that's precisely why that's not the answer. You know, Mel, if there are other things that they should be doing, if they had the power to be doing it. And the fact that they're not doing it isn't just, oh, well, they're waiting, they're planning. They're you know, yes, of course. Well, duh. But people are pushing back, you know,
yeah.
and the most important thing is to be aware and have awareness of the strategies and methods that work. You know, how do you talk to people, right? When you're out there and organizing, yeah. I did community organizing, right? How do you address people, right? What are the issues that we all connect on? And right. how do we cut through the things that they're making it sound like are like left, right stuff? And people are like, well, you know, I own a gun. But I also don't want them to eliminate the funding for, you know, preschool because I have kids in kindergarten or whatever. You know what I mean? So people are torn between voting Democrat, Republican, okay? What you need is people don't know is that at what level does the platform of that politician frickin' apply? Like, frankly, if a politician was pro-choice, but it was at a certain level and was never going to be, you know, voting on anything, they're not going to be on the Supreme Court. It's not federal law, it's state, right? This is just like, right? I don't care where they stand on that issue. If I was going to vote on that issue alone, but then they're actually going to be selling off some, to, you know, to some private conglomerate, like all the acreage of the town I live in,
right.
or put it into some multi-billion-dollar lease that, right? And I just thought I was voting for family values. So right. there's lots of ways to get scammed, you know, and don't get scammed by the family values vote. Don't get scammed by the labor vote. Like you have to look at everything in this agenda that's happening and be like, who's the candidate that is reaching out to people that's building popular power? It's often a Republican candidate. It could be a Democrat candidate. It could be a Green. It doesn't matter.
Right.
Like, what is the issue in your community? You know, maybe this Democrat in your case would be totally wrong on every other issue, but on that city council, they're the veto of some, you know, BlackRock coming in bulldozing the forest or whatever. You see what
right.
I'm saying? So,
oh yeah, totally.
So these are the things people have to be aware of, the issues, and all the politics is local. All the politics is local.
Right.
You know, that's where your vote, that's where your reality is. That's where people know who you are. That's where you're respected in your community. That's you work. It's an institution where you work. You know, that's where people, that's where your voice is the strongest, right? At the local level. And that's where we want to be building power. Like there's a lot of complaints about the direction of things in Washington. And right. that's only disconcerting because Washington has so much power. But we're not in a fight over who controls all this power in Washington. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, there's, of course.
We just want less power in Washington, you see? And why that is such a complicated thing for people, because this is what it boils down to. there is a thinking among some Democrat voters that they represent people that are too stupid to understand what's in their best interest. So we need a government program for them to help them, to show them, to feed them, to clothe them, to wipe their butt. And all it does is perpetuate the same crisis and creates these relationships of need, relationships of coming back, and the dependency crisis. So all these things are, you know, people, and people are breaking out of it, and they're realizing that these are not places you want to live. You know, these are not societies that are good, that you want to raise children in. So, you know, and now people have been seeing that has been shifting. Like, I'm just totally anti-George Bush. Don't misunderstand what I'm about to say. But they knew from going back to 2000 and 2004 that all the elections were drifting rightwards. All the elections were drifting rightwards. The whole country was drifting. Like, it was just like, for 20 years, they knew that Roe v. Wade was going to go out the door eventually, because eventually people are going to see the pictures. You know, eventually people, that's what moves everybody in the end, when they realize that how early human life starts.
Right.
You know, really, and all these things, that kind of issues like this, that's a very good example. You know, these are the things that have been moving, that what are the things that when you realize, when you see with your own eyes through Internet 1.0 and then Internet 2.0, like, what are the things? And some of the things kind of seem like left wing things, anti-capitalist, maybe anti-crony capitalist, anti-whatever, anti-greed, you know, that kind of seems like a left-wing thing. And then you have these things that relate to your values, that relate to the past, that relate to our faiths, that relate to Christianity, that relate to maybe the founding ideas of this country, that people, because that was the past now, so now we can say those are conservative.
Right.
You know, but like, this is the moment, Mel, and I've never been as excited as I am right now, because look, now that they've been challenged, they can't keep it together. They lied about the security arrangement. They said, oh, we have this whole thing covered. What happened? Russia invades Ukraine, right? This is something that the Biden administration, based on what we saw with Afghanistan, like, was anyone surprised? This would never happen. That was never what had happened under the past administration. It would have been, I mean, the thing wouldn't have gotten to that point. You see, it's not just de-escalating on February 19th or something. No, it wouldn't have gotten to that point.
Right.
Like, these are, and to find out that Twitter suppressed information from voters during an election cycle, as the FBI was telling them to, as the FBI was prosecuting and persecuting political opponents of one political party.
Right.
This is worse than Watergate. This is times 10 times 100. This is the weaponization of the justice system against the American people, against candidates that, frankly, I don't really know everything they represent. The issue is that this is being weaponized and turned against American people. You can't just say, oh, this is just the cost of doing politics.
No.
That's when you get into crises like you have in Brazil right now. That's when you get into situations like we saw starting to pop off in Peru. These are things that are happening in Mexico. These are things that are happening in China, what we saw just with the Congress of the Communist Party. They just basically showed that the old guard is out.
Right.
They literally showed them the door, right? Like on live TV, everyone saw it. So big changes in the world. And we've been asleep for so long, thinking about, you know, waiting for America Online to, you know, connect. And, you know, it's like, no, it's amazing, because all of these new technologies that are pushing people to be afraid of technology, like, our kids are going to figure out the hacks, and they're going to be dealing with things. They're going to be, you know, hacking the facial recognition stuff. They're going to be looking, they're going to be walking around looking like different people to us. They're going to have holographic stuff showing on, you know, changing their facial features for cameras and stuff. Okay. So they're going to know how to get out. They're going to know how to get out of class to go to the bathroom to smoke a cigarette. They're going to know how to do those things. Okay. Like, have faith in people's ingenuity. Like, that's, you can't think like a leftist that think everyone is some like victim waiting to be saved and no one knows what to do. People have been surviving for thousands, millions of years. Like, we're going to be all right. We got this.
Right, right. That's what I think, too. These people, the Great Resetters, the Davos crew, they forget that, A, I believe in God, and I believe everyone has the spirit of God in them, and that nothing is more powerful than the human spirit and the mind and the ability to create. And I agree with you, and I've been saying this for quite a while. Everything that they're proposing if used for good, you know, all the way down the mRNA and you know, the digital currency and all, if used for good by good people, it could be a good thing. If bad people that are opportunists and selfish and godless are controlling it, then it's going to be a bad thing. And that's where we have to change the tide. And now I want to, because you're a solutions guy, you know, you've been doing this a long time. People come to me a lot and they say, well, what can I do? What should I be doing? The average American that loves this country, loves their children, is watching the controlled demolition of this country, our wealth being squandered, our borders are wide open, our cities are dystopian with no laws. We know that it can be temporary, but I believe that we are the answer. There's people out there waiting for something to come to help them or change. And I don't believe that's going to happen. I believe we have to do it. But what exactly do we, the average person in my neighborhood, what should that guy that wants to get involved be doing?
There are people who live in areas where a lot of people around them think very similarly to them. There are people who live in areas that it's easy, right? There are people who live in areas and they feel very much like they're very different mentality. And that's where I think the calling is. That's where I think the real question actually is, okay? Right. And that's about, in other words, that means that you are consuming media and you're interacting with people in the digital sphere and you have opinions which in your community are now alternative to theirs, right? So now you have to figure out like how to speak in their language. So it's not a popular, it's not an ego contest. It's not about being right. It's not about, you can't enforce your vocabulary on them. We've right. learned how that goes very wrong, right? So like you want to adapt their language. And I mean, sort of begs the question, like, why are you living there in the first place and stuff like that? So everyone has a situation. Maybe they went to go live with a parent who's aging and they still want to, you know, be involved in their community, but their community has different values than their own. You'd be surprised that people actually have more of the same values than not, we find, right? Mm-hmm. Organizing can't work if this is not true, okay? So what it is like, instead of trying to position yourself to someone else, like, what are the things that I think that they don't think? Right. How can I say the things that in their language that is agreeable to them, that they know to be true, right. that this is just like plus one on top of the five pieces that they already have. You know, you always want to be building upon people's knowledge. You never want to create a situation where you're saying you need to get rid of everything you thought you knew. And here's the red pill. Like, that's not how red pilling people works. Okay. It's adding to people's, it's validating people's ability to apprehend the world that they live in. You don't want to cause them some kind of like crisis and, you know, oh, now I have, you know, confirmation bias or whatever. Right. And so then in terms of building power at the community level, people don't realize that at the level of the city council, so much is actually going on. And people learn from the last election cycles, actually, how everything goes through the city council when it comes to a lot of the things for elections. And so when you have the ability to have a local power, what about the sheriffs, right? People should be directly involved in these sheriff's elections, super important. And and moving forward, when it gets to be, you know, potential differences in interpretation of the law, okay, there are going to be people who have to follow their conscience, right? And they have to go along with the local authority of power. They have to go along with where their hearts are at, what were the opinions that got them elected, like what is their actual, right? Do they have a mandate, right? And those are the kinds of things that electing local sheriffs and stuff are going to come in, figure in very hugely in the near future. Right? Because when you look at the kinds of potential crises they have planned for the major cities, you have to always be looking at water supply, food supply, things like this. Then you're going to have a breakdown of law and order. These are the kinds of things which, unfortunately, Mel, there are billions and even trillions of dollars to be made in manufacturing these types of crises, despite that it destroys the lives, it destroys our country, destroys the lives of millions of people. If there was a sense in elements of the oligarchy that there was no way that they could like turn bucks the way they want to or whatever moving forward, like they would definitely like collapse the thing. They would definitely do that if they would make a lot of money. That's the reality. They have no patriotic sense of, you know, duty to law and order in the very basic sense of existence. Right. So you're talking about in the streets. Yeah.
That's good that you're saying that, because I keep saying, like, especially because I see it, I'm in a big city, is the black whole Black Lives Matter movement, defund the police, no bail, no jail. You know, a lot of the things that they put into play in New York, at least, has been very bad for the black community, and the black community knows it. And you know, and it's very hard to, you know, also here we have a big problem. They've brought a lot of illegals into New York City. So citizens are being kicked out of shelters to be replaced. They're putting them up. And we have a huge Latino community here that's also really pissed. You know, and it's all very real and in your face here, because it's very expensive to live here. And people that really need help aren't getting it because the help is going elsewhere. And it's becoming a problem. And I agree with you. We have to meet where people are, because I go to events with all kinds of people, Muslim, Christian, Jews, you know, black, white, Asian, Latino, and everyone kind of meet in the middle on a bunch of things that are really relevant to our future, our kids, our paying our rent, you know, what's going on with crime. So that's the one thing. I'm going to have you back, of course, but this is the one thing that you really know about. So why is it on our side, or I hate to say side, because I think the only sides right now are American and anti-American globalists, but on the side of people that love God and country and their children and America and want our sovereignty and our Constitution and Bill of Rights to remain, very little ability to organize. Yeah, like it just seems like there's a lot of people. My mom even started in Florida, like a We the People group, and it had 10 people and now it has 100 people. But there's a lot of little groups out there, but not like the left. And I think something you said is really important with the left billionaire class, the, you know, liberal world order elites that run the oligarchy, is that they profit from a lot of this stuff. And it seems like the people that are more the conservative billionaire class, they don't want anything to do with it. It just seems like the money flow is always going to the left-wing causes, the liberal causes, the welfare state, you know, all the regulations, all the different, you know, they're always starting this, especially this administration, are always starting new committees, you know. And on the conservative side, it seems like the real billionaires on the conservative side want nothing to do with it. It's weird.
I'll be real, real clear, just so people understand this, okay? 1 in 10 people who's an employee in the United States, if you include the public sector, right, is a member of a labor union, where around 1-2% of their gross income goes to union dues, in addition to another $10 to $20 a month that they know that they opt to go to politics. But right. From the money that's their union dues, also can go to politics, right. As long as that money goes to a pot, and so long as 55% of the money from that pot goes to something besides money on politics.
Right.
So that's how this stuff really works. Now, there are no equivalents. There's no organization that 1 in 10 Republicans is paying $50 a month to.
Right.
That's a huge thing. Just. Yeah. From that, right?
I'm in two unions, and I know almost every dollar I pay goes to liberal causes at the very top. So, you know, and there's nothing, and teachers unions the same, a lot of these first responder unions the same. So, you know, we're at a place where we have to keep figuring out how to, I lost you for a minute. Just your video. Okay, you're back. Hold on. Not your audio yet, but you're back.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, you're back. Don't worry, my editor will fix it. So, but this is important about the unions and about organizing on a level that we can all meet in the middle. Because, you know, it's funny, it's all this diversity, equity, and inclusion stuff that they're doing the hiring, and you're watching it. They're dumbing down our universities, you know, no more LSATs, no more MCATs, no more grades. You know, everyone's welcome in the tent, regardless of merit. you know, this is all backfiring because they're also creating the inability for things to function, which I think people have had it. But diversity, equity, inclusion, when I look at that, I turn it around and I say, well, diversity isn't really our strength. What we have in common is, you know, equity isn't equality. And inclusion is just saying that you can choose by whatever metrics you choose to do things. And I think people are onto this and I think we can work with that. But going forward, I really, really hope that people start to realize that, you know, we the people of the United States have never been in a situation, I don't think, where united we stand, divided we fall is more pressing, where the stakes are this high. Because I just want to tell you this real quick. I was at, I lived down the street from the UN and there was an IMF meeting. And we were sitting at a table and I knew we were next to like three guys that were actually at the IMF meeting. And we got to talking, you know, they were having drinks, whatever. And I go, oh, you're here to plan America to become Venezuela. And he goes, no, it's going to be way worse than Venezuela. And he laughed and he meant it. And I thought the American people need to hear how smug and disgusting this rhetoric from this globalist class is, because we would unite if people really understood the stakes, is my opinion.
Yes, what they've done is they've made the things that they've introduced a new type of classism. For a long time, it was impolite. For a long time, you know, from about the close of the last century, for the last 100 years, it's been impolite to publicly mock working people, right? And now what the elites think is that they have their like ideology, that they're well-traveled. They've, you know, they've been in orgies, the soirees, they've been in whatever. So that's, then they think that they have these perspectives that, you know, poor people are just too simple. They haven't traveled more than 20 kilometers from their house. You know, they're still watching a black and white TV, things like this. No, they honestly believe that.
I know.
These things about people. So they instead of just having an open distaste for regular people, what they're doing is saying, no, it's about these ideas. It's about these ideas that regular people have that are just so wrong. So and when they look at all of the problems in the world, when they look at, right, what they do is they forget about all of the actual problems, and then they just focus on the opinions of a few people, and then say that's everyone. Everyone is racist. Everyone is this. Everyone is that. This is a planned thing. It's very toxic. They want people to dislike each other. They want people to be like, we have nothing to talk about. And when we say that, they have won. When we say, you know what, voting is a waste of time, they have won. When we say that being involved in our institutions, all of the institutions are corrupt, listen, like that's the gargoyle effect. There are globalists that are paying bot armies to spread conspiracy theories that the globalists control everything. They want you to think that they've already won, because if you think that they've already won, you don't fight. That's the biggest victory, is if you don't fight. So that's, I think, the underlying point I'd like to say.
Great. And just to end on, you actually are very positive about the future and think that this is a time that we can actually make a lot of difference and change in the right direction. So any last words for my audience out there? I'm looking forward to having you back. We lost you we lost touch for too long, because you make a lot more sense than almost anyone else out there. So any last words for my audience?
Yes, absolutely. I would only say that when you think about how things were 100 years ago, do you ever wonder how Bonnie and Clyde robbed the bank? And you're like, that must have been really easy. There was no phones. They could just walk in, rob the bank. Like, there was no way to catch helicopters. Okay, just think about how things are going to be in the future and think about what you can get away with and do now. So think about the present from the point of view of the future, and you'd be like, we are so free. There are so few things actually holding us back. We have to stop listening to this negative propaganda about what if, what if, what if. That's a racket. Like, you live in a reality. Be here, be now, do the things that you can do. You'd be surprised how much it is.
Great. And where can people find you?
I'm one of the most censored and deleted people.
I know. On the internet. It's you can see why. You're actually making sense and giving solutions.
You know, I'm doing just Telegram. So that's at New Resistance, or, you know, Telegram, whatever, .me/New Resistance, whatever that is. But it's at New Resistance, one word, New Resistance, Telegram channel. I'm focusing a lot on the conflict in Ukraine right now because it's obviously a subject that I actually have information on, and it's a war, so kind of a lot of attention. But I also looked at a lot of the things happening inside the United States. We look at what's happening with elections, looking at what happened with the past administration. Also look at the legacy of the last administration and the things that were done during the last administration that we are still benefiting from today, and things that haven't happened yet.
Great. Well, I check out the New Resistance a lot on Telegram. I sneak over there and I take a look, and you are always on top of it. I would like to have you back soon to talk about Ukraine, but today I wanted you to kind of talk about what we can do as American citizens to mobilize and take back our country, because it's our country, by the people, for the people, right? So thank you so much. You are an amazing guy, and I hope to see you soon. We'll put all your links below. Joaquin Flores is somebody that you should be following on New Resistance, and keep up the great work. I know you're censored right now big time, but the tide will turn, and your voice will be one of the loudest. I look forward to that. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mel. God bless.
See you too. Hello, Patriot Pals. I am here again to talk to you about something that's concerning me, and it might be concerning you. This is something all of us are starting to feel on the front lines, which is the controlled demolition of the US dollar and our economy. Right now, if you go to the supermarket or you go fill up your car or just your day-to-day expenses, we are seeing an average of $6,000 in bigger costs across the board for each American family at this point. Our 401ks and our pensions are being decimated, and there seems to be no end in sight, at least not right now, because we are at an 8% inflation rate, and that does not seem to be the end of it. And that is a 40-year high. So we've never really seen anything like this in our lifetimes. What we've seen in 2021 and 2022 with the Federal Reserve and the printing of cash is an influx where 40% of the US dollars out there have been printed in the last 2 years, devaluing our dollar dramatically. The rest of the world right now is strongly considering returning back to the gold standard and leaving the reserve currency of the US dollar behind. This has been a result of the sanctions in Russia and other sanctions by our government on foreign countries that no longer trust the US dollar. And I think the best thing we can do is know that we have to weather this storm. We have a financial storm brewing. We are going to get through it. America will prevail. But in the meantime, I really am suggesting, as I am doing myself, to protect your savings, protect your 401ks and IRAs. And the great way to do that for me is gold and silver. I've been working with Beverly Hills Precious Metals for a little over 2 years. They've been really great with me and my family and friends. They have experts in different fields and different avenues. And if you go to our partners page and you go to Beverly Hills Precious Metals, you will find a real person who knows exactly what can be done to help you in whatever circumstance you're in, wherever you find yourself. They will meet you there. They will help you come up with a plan. You can have your gold and silver delivered to you. They also have a depository that's insured that you can have your gold and silver there for you. And in the end, I do believe that America will succeed and we will rise again. And this country will return to the greatness and the beauty that we know and love. But in the meantime, we have a storm ahead. It's very uncertain. To learn more, please go to the Mel Kay Show Partners page and find Beverly Hills Precious Metals and contact the experts there to find the best path for you and your family to protect your savings and to prepare for whatever's ahead. God bless you. God bless America. And please take care of your family first. Hello, Patriot Pals. I wanted to talk to you a little bit today about our amazing partner, Mel Kay Superfoods. A lot of people do the food prep programs that they come in, you know, freeze-dried and all of that. This is not that. This is a full serving of fruits and vegetables and protein. It is a way to maintain a healthy diet no matter what you're doing, no matter where you are, no matter what happens in this country. Because again, it's very affordable, and at the same time, it's very easy to follow, and it is like having a full garden outside your house that you're going and picking fresh fruit and fresh vegetables every single day. You have that same nutrients inside your cupboard. You know, prepare now, be ready. A lot of people do prepping stuff. This is an excellent way to prep to make sure that you and your family always have the essential nutrients that you need to live a healthy, full, life out there. Please check out Mel K Superfoods. We're loving the program. We'd love for you to join us. Please get in touch with the show if you're having benefits from the Superfoods program at Mel K Superfoods. We'd love to hear from you. Go to MelKSuperfoods.com and join me in supercharging our wellness journey and living our best, healthiest lives ahead.
Hey, Patriot Pals, Rob Reilly here. One of the most important things Mel and I do in this war between good and evil is traveling the country, meeting fellow patriots like yourselves. We share stories, resources, gain new tools, make new friends, and get activated to take back our freedom for God and country. Go to the MelKShow.com events and come join us. You will have an amazing experience and be reinvigorated to stand for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. As always, God wins. See you there.